From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
This week on the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition.
2013 was a busy year for Governor Brown and the California legislature. Bills were debated and voted on that would impact energy, such as hydraulic fracking, education, including whether to make it easier to fire teachers, and immigration, including whether to allow undocumented immigrants to apply for driver's licenses. After the dust of the legislative session is cleared, what bills were vetoed and which ones were signed by the governor? And what does it all mean for the legislative agenda in 2014? We'll ask Assemblymember Christian Olson, a Republican from Modesto, Dan Walters, a political columnist with the Sacramento Bee, and John Myers, political editor for News 10 in Sacramento. The California's 2013 legislative session, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
From Fresno, the Maddie Report, with Executive Director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. 2013 was a busy year at the state capitol, and we're fortunate to be joined by a key legislator and a key communications advisor for the Speaker of the Assembly today. Kristen Olson is an assembly member from Modesto, and Steve Maviglio is a communication advisor to the Speaker of the Assembly, John Perez. Welcome to the Maddie Report.
Thanks.
I should say welcome back, because you've been on before. Kristen, let me start with you first. Every year, the California Chamber of Commerce comes out with its job killers list. There were 38 bills on that list this year. 37 of them were defeated. Was 2013 a good year for business?
You know, it was a good year in the sense that we were successful in defeating many of the bills that would have led to more job loss in California. But I wouldn't call it a good year in the sense that at the same time, we didn't do anything to proactively pass bills that will spur job growth, that will help families who are still desperately trying to find jobs, particularly in the San Joaquin Valley where we live. You know, we need the legislature to take action on positive steps that help spur job growth, not just on stopping bills that would make it even worse.
Okay, well, Steve, one of the things that did happen this year, that the one chamber targeted bill that survived dealt with minimum wage. Is an increase in the minimum wage a good or bad thing for California's economy?
Well, I think it's a very good thing. We are in a state now where the economy is recovering. We're growing faster than Texas in terms of job growth. We're leading the nation. The governor signed 13 bills passed by the legislature yesterday that enhances job creation. So I think it's the right move, and it actually avoided a major ballot showdown. Some people in labor were pressing to put something on the ballot that would increase the minimum wage with indexing. This was seen as a compromise, and even the chamber didn't squawk about this one too much.
Indexing means that that would increase automatically over
time.
Right,
with the cost of living increase.
Okay. Kristen, so we have overtime change, 25% increase in the minimum wage. We've got overtime rules I was going to talk about in terms of domestic workers. We've got expanding the definition of family leave. Did labor get too much, too little, or was it just right?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, there's no question about the fact that labor is a very powerful special interest group in Sacramento. We have many. And when the goal is good-paying jobs that people can provide for themselves and their families, that's a good thing. But I do think a number of things went way too far. The overtime law now for domestic workers, I still have yet to hear a compelling argument that that's good for the workers themselves. Many of these people want to work overtime. They want to be able to earn more and provide for their families. And I think bills like that serve opposite interests.
So overtime for domestic workers don't want overtime?
I think if you talk to them, they probably say they do. And I think we're looking at the minimum wage worker, the lower medium income class workers. They want more of this pie that's growing in California. We've seen tremendous growth at the top end. Some of those at the bottom end need to share in our prosperity as well.
You know, I want to ask you, Kristen, about education. You've been involved in education for quite some time before you were in the legislature. A lot of activity this year on education. Local control was a big issue. It's been a big issue for a while. The governor vetoed a bill to add more accountability on new school funding. He doesn't seem to want to burden districts with additional compliance requirements with the local control funding formula. Good idea or bad idea?
I think it's a good idea. I actually believe this year was a very good year overall for education in California. We have a long way to go to reform policies that make sure we're achieving excellence for our students. But the local control funding formula empowers school board members to do the job they were elected to do, and that is to allocate resources to make decisions according to the unique needs of their district. And I agree with the governor that we are likely through this formula to achieve the goal in closing achievement gaps so that all kids, regardless of where they live, have the ability to succeed in education and therefore later in life.
You know, there also was an issue concerning whether we should continue the standardized STAR testing for K through 12 in California as we move to a new Common Core approach, and whether to actually report the computerized Common Core results. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is a very complex one, and I was hopeful it would get to a good place where we could have a solid substantive transition plan to Common Core. Unfortunately, I think where the bill ended up was not in a good place. It eliminates all school testing in this year during that transition. And I equate it to as if I was knew I was going to buy a car a year from now, and so I sold my current car today without any plan for how I would have a vehicle for transportation or public transit within that year until I get that new car. That doesn't make any sense. And so we need to be thoughtful about how we're going to make this transition. I think if we do it well, we have a great opportunity to bring problem-solving, critical thinking skills back to the classroom, something that employers say kids desperately need today and they're not getting. But to eliminate all school testing is bad for kids, it's bad for parents, and it's bad for schools.
Well, another issue, Steve, was teachers and whether or not that should be easier, frankly, to fire bad teachers. Bill came out, the CTA, the Teachers Association, supported it. The California school boards did not. What are your thoughts on that bill?
Well, this is an outgrowth of a bill that failed last year, and it came back this year with support of a lot of the players you mentioned, too, on different sides. But I think most of those that were involved in the discussion actually came to agreement on common ground here. Basically, it's going to involve a little more due process for teachers before they get fired. I think it's a compromise that just about everybody could live with and expect to see to go into law.
Can you live with it?
No, I think it has a lot of problems. I will say I blame both sides of the debate on this issue. There is no higher priority to me than making sure we have highly effective teachers in the classroom and making sure we are dismissing those who actually break the law. Now, I'll be the first to say those are few and far between. And teachers also have an interest in removing them from the classroom. AB 375, I'm not sure it struck that proper balance, but I will say there is blame to share on both sides of the debate for not coming to the table and crafting a solution.
Okay.
It's one thing to make complaints. It's another thing to be part of a solution.
We're talking with Assemblymember Kirsten Olson, Republican from Modesto, and Steve Maviglio, Communication Advisor for the Assembly Speaker. There are some issues that elicit an immediate reaction: immigration, gun control, crime, and the environment. So let's talk about them. So, Kristen, there are several bills relating to immigration. Probably the one that got the most attention was AB 60, that allows undocumented immigrants to apply for driver's licenses. What do you think of that?
You know, this was a bill that I really struggled with. I think there's good arguments on both sides of the debate. At the end of the day, the decision I made was not to support it, and I'll tell you why. I think every time California passes one of these piecemeal efforts toward immigration reform, we give Congress one more reason not to act. And Congress is failing to do their job by not acting on comprehensive immigration reform. I have traveled back there twice now advocating for immigration reform. We need to provide a way that people here can earn residency, can earn citizenship. But for the driver's license bill, I think it's putting the cart before the horse. And I think it's just one more reason, one more excuse that Congress uses of not to act because states can do little stuff on their own.
Kind of the opposite of the governor, that the governor thinks is going to push Washington to do something.
So far, I don't see other states following our lead.
Yeah, Steve, I want to ask you a question about another immigration-related bill, AB 4, that was signed by the governor called the Trust Act. And that would prohibit police from holding those arrested for minor crimes solely for immigration purposes. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that was another tough one that we've been struggling with in the legislature for a long time. And again, it sort of goes back to the argument you just heard. And I'm glad to see the criticism of the Republican Congress for not moving forward on immigration reform. But this was a bill that a lot of legislators felt pretty strongly about, and I believe it got a little bit of bipartisan support. This is something the Latino community feel very strongly about. Police should do their job and not try to be the border patrol.
You know, another big issue is prisons and overcrowding in California's prisons. How do you think that issue is going to eventually get resolved?
Oh, good question. I don't know that anybody knows the answer. I'll tell you, I think this three-court, three-judge panel is absolutely insane, saying that we have to release
thousands of— I hope they're not watching the show.
Yeah, thousands of criminals within the next couple of months. Early release shows that our prison system is broken. At the same time, I think we need to rethink the way we run the prison system in California. I'm not sure it makes sense to house thousands of frail, ill, elderly people in a very expensive system. So we need to rethink our policies, but we also need to be given time to adjust, and to for the court to tell us we have to release these prisoners immediately is crazy and hurts law-abiding citizens and families in our communities.
And this was one of the several major issues that the Speaker and the Republican leader stood together on, along with the governor, and actually worked very hard on this. So we know there's not going to be any early release. That's everybody agreed on that. The Senate Democrats tried to go at this with a little different angle. Ultimately, a compromise that weighted heavily in favor of what the Assembly did was come to bear. And so we'll see what the court says now.
Well, let me transition to another issue, Steve, and that is gun control. California gun dealers sold a record 818,000 firearms last year, up roughly 215,000 from the previous year. That's a big spike.
Yeah.
The governor has 14 bills on his desk to strengthen the gun control laws that are already considered some of the toughest in the nation. It sounds like he's going to sign some and not sign others. What are your thoughts on the need for more gun control?
Well, I think what we've seen across the nation is a compelling reason why we need some more gun control. I think what came out of the legislature was not the strongest package in the nation. The Speaker actually voted against, I think, one major bill, and I think the governor will probably veto some. I think we're seeing a real public outcry in the wake of things that happened in Connecticut and throughout the nation, and California has stepped up and, as we have always done, leading with the assault weapons ban, trying to go to the next phase to make sure gun owners have their responsibility kept to have a gun, and also pass meaningful common sense legislation. We've done that.
What do you think?
You know, the fact is gun control measures do not prevent crime, as much as we may want them to. Taking guns out of the control of law-abiding people actually helps criminals further their life of crime. And so we have to enter this debate with logic and facts, not with emotion. And I am fearful that in California and many parts of the nation, that emotion is leading the debate here. But at the end of the day, taking guns out of the hands of law-abiding families is going to allow criminals to continue crime rather than prevent it.
Let's transition to another kind of controversial issue, at least for some folks, and that is CEQA reform. This year was supposed to be the year of CEQA reform. It really didn't happen. Do you think that something needs to be done to amend CEQA?
Absolutely. There are so many clear examples of the fact that CEQA is broken and has gone so far away from what was originally intended. You know, whether it's the exemptions for stadiums or whether it's the exemption for high-speed rail, the list of exemptions go on and on. And so at what point is the legislature going to say enough is enough? We're going to streamline the process for everyone. Because as long as we don't do that, it's families and businesses and opportunities for the economy in the San Joaquin Valley that are hurting because we don't have the influence and the money to make changes. And this is something I believe that the Speaker actually agrees on. He's ready for CEQA reform. We just need to get it done, and it's ridiculous that it's taking so long.
Only got about 30 seconds left in the segment, Steve, so you get to talk about these environmental issues. I'm going to package CEQA with fracking, the fracking law. So did the environmentalists, are the Democrats concerned about whether the environmentalists are unhappy with what happened on those two issues this year?
Some are, some aren't. A lot of environmentalists cheered what actually happened, and that's some meaningful first-step regulation. It's not a ban, which many of them wanted. It's not a continued exploitation, which is what the oil industry wanted, so I think we struck the right balance.
Well, I want to thank Assemblymember Kirsten Olson, Republican from Modesto, and Steve Maviglio, Communications Advisor to the Speaker of the Assembly, for joining us. As promised, we now have two of the most respected political observers of state politics to discuss the legislative year that was. Dan Walters is a political columnist with the Sacramento Bee, and John Myers is a political editor from News 10 in Sacramento. Welcome back to the Maddie Report.
Thanks.
Well, Dan, the Democrats captured 2/3 majorities in both houses of the legislature. First time that's happened in 130 years. And some Californians predicted that the Democrats were going to push the state much farther to the left, but the political reality is it seemed to prove much different than that. Why is that?
Well, they never really had 2/3 supermajority. They had them elected, but immediately people started resigning to take other offices. A couple of people, state senators, left right away to go to Congress, for example, and then you have to have special elections. Then members of the Assembly run for the Senate, and then you have vacancies there, and you have special. We've had about 15 or 20 special elections in the state this year so far. So they never really dependably had 2/3 supermajorities, briefly, for just a few minutes, basically. Next year, they will have those supermajorities, but they didn't have them this year. And there's also, the supermajorities are so bare, I mean, they're just barely there, and that they had no room for error. Even if they had the supermajorities, you have a certain number of moderate Democrats in both houses of the legislature. So if you try to do anything too wild and crazy, like go out and raise taxes again or something like that, you're going to run into that. And so the legislative leadership decided to hold off on anything bold this year because they really knew it wouldn't happen. Next year, however, they're going to be under a lot of pressure to try some theft, some constitutional amendments, whatnot. And the question is, can they deliver those two-thirds supermajorities when push comes to shove? I have my doubts they can actually deliver them on the kind of issues that the Democratic left wants to deliver them on, like making taxes grow up or something like that.
John, I want to ask you about the Democratic supermajority. It's not like they didn't pass any laws that were supported by the constituency groups like public sector unions. My question is, it kind of follows up on Dan's comment. Did that curb or whet the left's appetite going forward in 2014?
Well, I mean, I don't. Is there any political group that is ever satisfied with what they get? I mean, everybody wants more or kind of counts the things that they didn't get. I think you've still got a key constituency of liberal legislators, of liberally aligned interest groups that do believe they need more, want more. Certainly some of those issues happen. I mean, the left won some things here. I think probably in my category, the most notable thing that happened is we got a deal on minimum wage, which was a minimum wage increase that had been
a 25% increase
fought by the business community. The governor wasn't necessarily on board at first, but he worked behind the scenes to kind of craft that deal. I think getting those alliances between moderate Democrats and liberal Democrats is really going to be fascinating to watch. Just really quickly, in the state Senate, for example, you've got a Richard Roth down in Riverside. You've got a Kathleen Galgiani in Stockton in San Joaquin County. And you've got to find an issue that you can get them with Lonnie Hancock in Berkeley and Ricardo Lara in Los Angeles. I mean, the issues that you can get everybody to agree on are going to be much more narrow than what, the liberal bastions may want. It's going to be a lot harder than just saying everybody's got a D by their name.
You know, it's interesting. The minimum wage issue specifically kind of points to what you're talking about, because one of the things they were talking about initially was a cost of living adjustment, but that was taken out in the final part of the legislation. Kind of the moderates kind of won the day on that issue. Dan, I want to ask you a question about immigration. The Democratic Party, they've tried to do some things, passing some laws that will impact immigrants. Republican Party, not so much. Does that change the political fortunes of either party?
No, I think it reinforces where they are on that issue. It's kind of a sideshow to the main game on immigration in Washington, D.C. It's California kind of going it alone like they do on so many other issues and saying, okay, they can't get immigration reform in California, in Washington, rather. We're going to kind of quasi-legalize illegal immigrants in California by giving them driver's licenses, by making them protected under some of the civil rights laws, by allowing undocumented immigrants to become lawyers and so forth. So it's a kind of a gesture. It's not the big immigration fix. It's just kind of a California fix, and it certainly endears the Democratic Party to Latino voters, and probably alienates them even more from Republicans. But I don't think it really changes much in terms of dynamics.
John, I want to talk to you about the environmental issues. I mean, the big issue was supposed to be CEQA reform this year. That didn't happen for all kinds of reasons. So the major piece of environmental legislation was on fracking. But the environmental movement was supporting it, and then they pulled their support at the last minute. They still passed. So has the environmental movement lost its influence on the Democratic Party?
I don't think so, and I think CEQA is the reason that I would point to they didn't. I mean, the environmental groups were fairly cohesive there in their concerns and fighting the CEQA issue, and all you really got was the Senate leader, Daryl Steinberg's smaller version, where it was, again, tinkering around the larger issue, much smaller than what the governor would have wanted. I think the environmental community—
Specifically, though, for his community in Sacramento,
but some statewide issues as well in terms of infill projects, things that are built in urban areas. But I think that shows that they still have power when they're together. Fracking is a great example of the environmental community did not agree on the issue. You had the Sierra Club leading this effort for a moratorium on the issue. You had other environmentalists that said, wait, maybe there's a middle ground. The last version of that legislation that the governor signed into law went too far for even the rest of the environmental community, and they all, at the end, abandoned ship there. But I think that when they're together, they're still very powerful in the Democratic caucus. And, we've been talking about moderates and liberals. I think the environmental community has power on both sides of that spectrum.
We're talking with John Myers, political editor for News 10 in Sacramento, and Dan Walters, political columnist for the Sacramento Bee. I cut you off, Dan. What did you want to say?
Well, I was rude. I jumped on it. No, I think that the environmental movement has lost some mojo in the Capitol. They won on the CEQA by basically nothing happening, only because the labor unions were with them on that. Because labor unions use CEQA as well as a lever. But on the one of the biggest issues they really lost, and that was trying to get some more enforcement powers for the Coastal Commission. They really got clobbered on that one, and the reverberations of that are still going on. And on the fracking thing, they were themselves fractured, in a sense, as John says. But I think the environmentalists would say that the passage of that fracking legislation was a loss for them, basically. And it was a kind of a almost a milestone kind of loss when they had a person who's their biggest champion, Fran Pavley, carry legislation that they, in the end, wound up opposing. That's a big symbolic loss for them, I think.
Yeah, I know. John, I want to ask you about Governor Brown. He seemed to wield an unusual degree of influence this year. Is it unfair to say that we haven't seen that kind of influence by a governor over the legislative process in quite some time?
Well, I mean, I think the answer probably is when you look at who the governors have been. I mean, Gray Davis, went out with the pitchforks after him. Schwarzenegger wielded some influence at the beginning because he had this huge political populism boulder pushing down on them, and then got marginalized through the process by the time he went out. Brown spent all of his time at the beginning focusing on the budget and didn't engage on a lot of these other issues. And it did feel this year as though, with the budgetary pressures receding a little bit, the governor had a little bandwidth, so to speak, left to kind of engage on things. And he's the kind of guy who likes to do that. I mean, yeah, you got to really give him some credit there on minimum wage and fracking and lots of things in prisons. He was very engaged in getting what he wanted on his desk.
So, Dan, can we stop calling the California legislature and California government generally dysfunctional? Have this gridlock finally been broken?
I'll never say that.
I think I read that in one of your columns.
Not good for papers.
It's functional in a sense, but it's still not dealing, I think, with the big important issues facing California. I think it still kind of has a very narrow focus. John Dry about Jerry being more engaged this year, and effectively so, and I think in a way it was kind of out of fear. He was, I think, afraid that a very liberal legislature would throw a lot of stuff on his desk and put him on the spot on minimum wage and jillions of other issues. So he wanted to make sure that what he got was something that he could sign rather than something he would have to veto and kind of put a sour taste in everybody's mouth. And so it was a kind of a self-protective mechanism, as it were.
Governor Brown has said, John, that California is forging a political path that could become a national model. So is California reclaiming its role as a trendsetter?
We've been trendsetter good and bad in the last few years, haven't we? I mean, we originally were good. That's the historical answer. And then in the last few years, we were the trendsetter for dysfunction. I don't know. I'm skeptical of any great title or tag to any of these things. I feel like that so many things have to be evaluated in the moment in which they were in. You know, Dan makes a great point about the governor trying to figure out what worked for him politically in this environment. I do think that the release of the supermajority blockade in state government, which really was about the budget for all those years, has changed the dynamic where you feel as though more things are happening. But that's also, too, because you got a Democratic governor and a Democratic legislature. Even when they don't see eye to eye, they still are more aligned than Republicans. So, I mean, I think there are lessons to be learned. And certainly, if things go right, the governor wants to say it's a great trend. And if not, he'll want to...
Only got about 20 seconds left, so very quickly, what's going to be the big issue in 2014?
I think prisons is still a big issue. I don't think that gets resolved. I think you've got to figure out long term.
Two things. Water bond, because the fate of the Twin Tunnel project rests on that water bond. And secondly, what, if anything, happens with the supermajorities in both houses, particularly on constitutional amendments, making it easier to raise taxes at the local level.
Well, I want to thank Dan Walters from the Sacramento Bee and John Myers from News 10 in Sacramento. And a quick plug for Dan's daily video blog, the Dan Walters Daily, and John's weekly podcast, Capital Connection.
If you want to keep up to date with state and local politics, you can sign up for our free e-newsletter, the Maddie Daily, by just logging on to our website at maddieinstitute.org.
The Maddie Report Valley Views Edition is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio and the nonpartisan Maddie Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on important public policy issues.
This is Mark Kepler for the Maddie Report Valley Views Edition. Thanks for joining us.